Well, hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I am Tim Healy, and you're invited to join me each week as we tackle the hottest stories, topics, and trends in business today, and we do it just for you. Today's entrepreneur, today's small business owner, right here on the Profit Express. So thank you for being on board. Thank you for listening today. Thanks for sharing some of your time with me. And while you're on Facebook, you can go to the Profit Express page to follow me and the show. Give us a like, a thumbs up. Comments on today's show. And of course, you can also follow me and the show on Twitter at Radio Tim Healy. That's at Radio Tim Healy. Do you own a car or a home? Do you have a job? Are you married and have kids? If you answered yes to any or all of them, then you are a negotiator. No matter what you do in life, you negotiate. We all negotiate. Whether with your kids, your spouse, your boss, or your clients, you're negotiating on a daily basis. Even if you don't think of yourself as a negotiator, it's a part of human life that is here to stay. And that's why today on the Profit Express, I want to help you become the best possible negotiator you can be. Now, whether the stakes include closing that big sale, whether it's a raise, whether it's a promotion, or simply getting your kids to agree to doing their homework, you are negotiating, and the outcome is important to you, so it's important to me. Now, my issue is that many of us have been misinformed about what a negotiation really is about and how to effectively maneuver your way through one successfully. Now, if you've been in business, you probably have no doubt heard about the win-win. You've heard about getting to yes, and of course, we've all heard about, well, let's just split the difference. Well, today's guest will share why those strategies really don't work so well. And that's why I'm very excited to have on one of the nation's leading negotiation experts on to help you win big at your next deal. And my guest is Chris Voss. He's the former FBI lead kidnapping negotiator who handled the kidnapping negotiations for every American kidnapped overseas. He's the founder and principal of the Black Swan Group, which provides training to Fortune 500 companies on complex negotiating, as well as teaching at USC, Georgetown, and Harvard. And he's also the author of the, in my opinion, the must-read book, Never Split the Difference. So it's a pleasure to welcome aboard the Profit Express, Chris Voss. Chris, how are you today?
Tim, I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for being on the book. And listen, we have a number of authors on the show, and this really is... It's a must-read, certainly if you're in business, but I think it's a must-read for anybody. So, great job on the book.
Thank you.
So let's get right into the book. Now, very early on in the book, you start off with this great story. I love this story, and I love, you know, we all learn better with stories. And the story goes like this. It was how the Harvard Negotiation Research Project team, if you will, they kind of tricked you, but... You ended up on top by beating two of Harvard's best at the negotiation game. What was that story all about? What happened there?
Well, you know, when you get a hostage negotiator show up with the people at Harvard, you know, they haven't seen you before. They want to test you a little bit. They, you know, they kind of want to see what you got, whether or not they should listen to you. And they're a little intrigued about what hostage negotiation is all about. And I can remember, you know, Bob Mnookin. Bob Mnookin's a bright guy, and he's a good guy. I like Bob a lot. Very smart dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he says, you know, so if I was a kidnapper and I had your son, how would you handle that? And I know where this is going. I know he's, you know, I could tell he wants to test me out a little bit. So I got to get him, you know, I got to get him to drop his guard. So... I say, you know, I just ask you a couple open-ended questions, that's all. And he kind of goes, really? And kind of laughs. I go, yeah. And so he says, so then he gets another person there to come and watch, and he gets his secretary to bring in a tape recorder, and he's like, all right, boss, get your son. $1 million, we're going to kill your son. Yes or no, right now, or we kill your son. And I just say, how am I supposed to do that? And he wow. Kind of blinks a couple of times. And he goes, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. Right, we got your son. We're going to kill your son. I go, how do I even know he's alive? You know, it's one thing to tell somebody you're going to ask him a couple open-ended questions, but as soon as you start hitting him with the questions, even if you told him you're going to do it, you know, it just catches them off guard. They don't expect it. They just stop the aggressive negotiator dead in their tracks because, you know, what's the legitimate question that you should actually ask? It makes the other guy feel like they're in charge, but you got the upper hand, and that's it's simple. It's not always easy, but it isn't complicated. It's just having the courage to go ahead and jump in and do it.
So they have two of these people from the Harvard negotiation project. They put their tape recorder on the table. They think they've got you. They kind of just spring this on you, and you, as you just shared, two open-ended questions, and they're basically stumped.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of funny.
That's got to make you feel pretty good.
Yeah, well, you know, I know how powerful this stuff is, you know, and I knew I was going to catch them off guard because, you know, it's deferential. Most people think in negotiations you got to be a power negotiator. You know, Roger Dawson wrote a book a long time ago, The Secrets of Power Negotiation. People want to have power.
Right.
You know, the power is in deference, man. The power is in getting people to collaborate with you without knowing that you made them collaborate. They think they're in charge, and you're making them. And great negotiations about great collaboration. I'm going to get you to collaborate with me, whether you want to or not.
Now, one of the mistakes people would typically make in a negotiation is they see it as an adversarial kind of interaction?
Yeah, you know, that's exactly right. And we always had a saying from the beginning, because I got a team. I got a great team around me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our sayings has always been, the adversary is the situation. The adversary is not the person across the table. We always refer to them as a counterpart. If you're negotiating with someone, you guys are faced with different aspects of the same problem. Whether you want to admit it or not, to solve that problem, you guys got to collaborate. So the adversary is the situation. Now, you may not see it that way, but for me to make the best deal possible, if I treat you like an adversary, we're going to leave money on the table. So I'm not going to be greedy. I want as much out of this as I can get, and I need you to collaborate with me so that I can max my deal. I don't mind if you make money at the same time. That's cool with me. You don't got to lose.
Right.
But for me to max my end, we got to collaborate.
And this is the Profit Express. Today's guest is Chris Voss, and we're talking about his book, Never Split the Difference. Tactical empathy is maybe we'll call it the cornerstone of your book. I think it'd be very valuable for the listeners. Can you explain what tactical empathy is in the negotiation process?
Yeah, you know, there's two important points to this, and both of them people have a hard time wrapping their mind around, because a lot of people think empathy is synonymous with compassion, and it is not. It's not compassion, it's not agreement, it's not sympathy. It is not compassion.
Hmm.
Now, using empathy on someone is a very compassionate thing to do, and that's the fine line. But first of all, it's not agreement, it's not compassion, which means you could use it with people you disagree with strongly. Now, a tactical aspect of it is, we know so much more about how the brain works now because of neuroscience.
Right, right.
Neuroscientists can look in our brain and can tell me how the electricity passes through the emotional areas of our brain. So if I now know how it works, and I know exactly the kind of negotiation skill that will diffuse your negative thoughts, and I know another skill that's going to hit your brain in another way, then why not be tactical about it? Why not use it so that we can make a great deal, because we know so much more about how the brain works? So it's those two ideas. It's not agreement, and it's just recognizing how our brain actually works and then taking advantage of that knowledge.
So hasn't there been studies or real research shown where when people are in agreement, their brain, the image of their brains are mapped together and they look very similar?
There's a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's the cool stuff about seeing into the brain. And you know, one of the critical things, we now know that negative thoughts get in, you know, it seems obvious, negative thoughts get in our way more than positive thoughts.
Sure.
But there's a thing in the brain called the amygdala. Almost everybody's heard of the amygdala.
Yep.
You know, the caveman brain, the lizard brain.
Right, right.
Three quarters of the amygdala is dedicated to negative thoughts, number one. All right, so that backs up our gut instinct about negativity.
Wow.
But the thing that hostage negotiators do that most people do wrong is if I just identify your negative thought, not deny it. So if we're in a negotiation, my gut instinct might be to say, look, I'm sure it seems like I'm not paying attention. No, I'm going to say, I don't want you to think I'm not paying attention to you. I'll deny it. That's the denial.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't want you to think I'm being greedy here. That's a great one. I don't want you to think I'm being greedy here. Now, our emotional intelligence has picked up that the other side feels we're greedy, and we're trying to get rid of it by denying it. But the hostage negotiator's technique, which is backed up by brain science, instead of denying it, I'm going to say, I'm sure it looks like I'm greedy here. Now, that identification of that emotion, actually, the negative diffuses it. And that, again, that's empathy. I didn't agree that it's true. I'm sure it seems that way. And that'll actually clear the barriers away. And that's really counterintuitive, and it's hard for a lot of people to do.
Wow. So you're blowing the minds of people all over. First, everybody listening, obviously, people reading your book, of course, and today's guest is Chris Voss. He's the author of the book, Never Split the Difference, former FBI top hostage negotiator. And we're going to get into this in a little bit, like all the bad habits that people have with negotiating. But before we do, how did the FBI come to learn that negotiations are based on emotion and not rational problem solving? When did that kind of change happen?
Well, my former boss, Gary Nessner, and Fred Lansley, you know, they started in on the program a few years after it was founded. It was first founded by NYPD, and they thought it was bargaining. And then Fred and Gary were out, and they started polling, talking to the police officers that they were teaching. They were finding out there wasn't any real bargaining going on in the situations that they were faced with. So they started asking questions, and they found out that everything was emotion-driven. So, you know, Fred and Gary started recognizing that emotions were driving this stuff, and mm-hmm. actually when I came into it, I learned a lot from them from the very beginning. Like, they put a heavy-duty emphasis on me learning by starting out of stuff like crisis hotlines, which is all about learning about human emotions. That's all it is. And so I had a huge grounding in it to begin with, and then it started to become full circle. And that's when myself and the guys that I was working with at the time, they said, well, let's wrap bargaining back in and see what happens if we can combine the two ideas. So it was just really blending ideas of the people that went in front of us had. They just didn't realize how connected they were.
Were certain schools of thought on negotiation, like, you know, we've mentioned Harvard before, were they denying emotion, and was their focus really trying to separate the emotion so it would be easier to deal with? Was that their thinking?
You know, they weren't really denying it. We actually ended up just being ahead of them on down the road.
Okay.
They were just starting to get into this, you know, when we connected with them, and a lot of the guys up there said, look, you guys are so far ahead of us in this thinking.
Right.
We're just getting started on it when you guys have really defined it. And, you know, we kind of had to. But it started out this whole rational approach, and if you talk to anybody from the academic community, they got to have stuff that's rational. You know, it's just not going to fly in their world.
Right, right.
But they say things like, and I've talked to academics, you know, they'll say things to you like, okay, well, so it works in reality. It's no good as a theory. And I'd be like, wait a minute. Oh, wait. Stop right there. We have this backwards. We need to get our theories to apply to reality instead of getting reality to apply to theory. And that's sort
right.
of how the academics look at things. And that's why I've always loved, you know, being in the business world since we've been applying it, because business people want what works.
Exactly.
If we can explain it afterwards, so much the better. If you can explain to me why it works, but first let's go with what works, and then as long as it works, I'll be satisfied with the explanation after the fact.
Right, exactly. Let's get what works and then worry about the theory after. There was a few researchers that you mentioned in the book, and again, today's guest, Chris Voss, we're discussing his book, Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. The two researchers that you'd reference, Tversky and Kahneman, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Kahneman.
Sorry, Kahneman. And they proved, and this, I'd love for you to kind of explore this a little bit. They proved that all humans suffer from cognitive bias. So what is that? But then how important, you know, how does it impact your ability as a human to negotiate?
Yeah, well, first of all, these guys were cool. I mean, but what I love, you know, these guys were revolutionaries. They were radicals. They were troublemakers. You know, they wouldn't accept what the academic community was putting out. They were kind of like, they were very much like, let's find out what works in reality and then let's figure out why it works. Mm-hmm. So they didn't do any academic studies. They just started trying out ideas in the real world. And they used to experiment on their families. You know, how do we, you know, their families were the guinea pigs and they had expanded out to students and everybody else around them.
Right.
And they had the best time. I mean, I'm sure these two guys were so much fun to work with. But they started finding out that, you know, nobody was rational, that everybody's got prejudice, everybody got biases.
Right.
And so they saw what was getting in everybody's way. And ultimately, you know, Amos Tversky died by the time they awarded the Nobel Prize, but they give Danny Kahneman the Nobel Prize in behavioral economics when he's not even an economist.
Really?
But it had such an impact on economics. Because it was decision theory, and of course, decision drives economics.
Yeah.
Kahneman and Tversky just said, like, look, everybody's point of view is what, you know, we call it, your reality is bent by your fear of loss. You bend your perception of what's happening in the world, it's bent by your perception of loss.
Ah. All right, so wait, say that one again. That's important. I want to make sure nobody missed out on the one. Repeat that one about the fear of loss.
Yeah, your fear of loss bends your perception of reality. It distorts it by double.
Really?
By at least double. And I think Danny Kahneman gave an interview one time where he said, like, you know, when we said it bends it by double, it's probably not fair. It's actually about five times. We just lowered the number to double because we wanted fewer arguments from our academic colleagues.
Really? So it has that much of an impact. That's amazing.
And that's actually why you can't split the difference. In reality, if you're trying to be fair, let's say you and I are have a difference of $10.
Okay. Oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be fun.
All right. I'm going to give in by five. So we could, quote, meet in the middle. And let's say we're not playing games, because most people play games with this anyway. There's an old saying, the person who offers to meet you in the middle is often a poor judge of distance. But let's pretend that we're each trying to be fair, the F word.
Yes.
But the problem is, because I'm human, if I give by five and my loss is distorted by double, I got to tag you for 10 for me to actually feel it. And I'm not going to be happy until I've got you for 10. Now, if I nail you for 10, you got to get me back by 20 before you're happy. And that's how this downward spiral gets started, and it never goes away.
So even no matter what it is, no matter what the dollar amount is, splitting in the difference inherently from the get-go, you will not be able to be satisfied because of the loss.
Exactly. You will never be happy. And that's why a lot of bad negotiators say, you know, the best deals are where both sides are unhappy. And, you know, my thought is that a description for a marriage? Because if you make a business deal with somebody, you might as well be married to them, because you're going to be living with their behavior and their feelings about it for the duration of the deal, right?
Sure, yes, yeah.
Term marriage.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a good prescription. So that's why, you got to get out of that. You got to find best fit is not the same as splitting the difference.